The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Very busy Monday here in the state of Arizona. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Brad Sesmatt Show. I'm Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy. Had a little vacation last week dealing with some travel issues. So his vacation extends a little bit. I don't know if it's technically a vacation or at this point or not, but excited to talk quite a few different angles going on here in the great state of Arizona. We are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Always appreciate their support. Our TV show on weekly throughout the entire week. We cover all things on the gridiron. Sometimes we mix it up with some different sports on Bally Sports Arizona as well. So make sure to check out Brad Sesmatt's Football AZ this week. Going to have a lot of content. We have the draft coming up. ASU just wrapped up spring ball. U of A right in the middle of it. And of course, recruiting never stops. That's a big part of what I do here at Sports 360 AZ. So make sure to check that out. On today's show, Chris Cartman will be chatting with us about ASU football and basketball. Nobody does it better than Chris when it comes to ASU. He is so tapped in. And just him and his team are just relentless in their coverage. You know, they attack it from all angles. So he gives some really good insight on where the football team is. Is there an area of concern? What happens to Jaden Daniels? You know, if something happens to him and he's not able to play for a game or two, who's able to step in? How's the rest of the quarterback room looking? So we discussed that. Shayna Rubin of the San Jose Mercury News. She covers the A's, big series, two-game series. Going to be a quick in and out for the Oakland A's coming to Arizona. And a lot of crossover. Joaquin Soria, Bob Melvin, you know, those are guys that have represented both the Diamondbacks and the A's. So we kind of chat about that and also preview the series. We're going to see a pretty impressive young pitcher on Tuesday from the Oakland A's, Jesus Luzardo. And they think he could be an ace. So going to be interesting to see what the series is. Also Tuesday, who's going to be the starter for the Arizona Diamondbacks? It could be Zach Gallen, which would be a huge boost. We saw what the Diamondbacks were able to do with Nick Ahmed now in the lineup, with Cole Calhoun in the lineup. It seemed like the Diamondbacks were just dropping like flies injury-wise here early on when you have Gallen get hurt. Cole Calhoun missed opening day. Nick Ahmed missed opening day. Ketel Marte got injured. And that's, you know, I think if you want to make a list of players that if the Diamondbacks are going to have a successful 2021, the two guys that can't get injured are Zach Gallen and Ketel Marte. And Gallen got hurt in a freak batting practice. You know, he had a small fracture, a hairline fracture, I believe, in his throwing arm, but it was affecting his curveball. They predicted might be end of May that we see him, might be 6 weeks, 8 weeks. It could be that he just misses 3 or 4 weeks. And they have talked about the possibility of Zach Gallen playing and pitching on Tuesday, which would be a massive boost for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Ketel Marte still has his hamstring injury, and there haven't really been many updates on that. But for Diamondback, if you're a Diamondbacks fan, you obviously want Ketel and his hot start to continue and him to get back to the field. But they wrapped up. They won a series against the Reds, who had a record-setting offense. They had a pitching staff that was doing really well. The back end of the pitching staff was even coming in pitching really well. But the Diamondbacks came away with the series win. And I think that's a big boost because the way things went down in Colorado, they had to win one in extra innings. It took just about everything to win just one. And then two really discouraging games. When Ketel goes down, when both of the starting pitchers for the Rockies go way deep into the game, and it felt like, you know, on my podcast, Diamonds in the Desert, I said, could the Diamondbacks be the common cure for the struggling pitching staff this year? Obviously early, but those struggles, it kind of indicated that. All of a sudden, the Diamondbacks were putting up crooked numbers every inning. Eduardo Escobar really able to step it up. Four straight games with a home run. So seems like they're starting to put things together. Luke Weaver goes no hit for 6 2/3 innings, ends up throwing 7, walks one batter, gives up one hit. But he looked like a completely different pitcher. Jody Jackson also, we're working on her. Hopefully we can get her later in the show. But definitely want to talk about the latest with the Arizona Diamondbacks as well, because I think there's a lot to discuss. And this, I think this is an interesting team. Again, if they get back fully healthy, I think that they, at the beginning of the year, I said they could go 81-81. That was my prediction. I was a little bit higher on the Diamondbacks. I think they have some good young players. But it was one of those things, and what I likened it to was in like an action movie. I remember distinct, I believe it's Pink Panther, or Pink Panther, Black Panther. In Black Panther, there is a scene where there's like kind of a casino deal going on. The bad guys come in, everybody flips tables over, and, you know, there's a big action shootout and all that sort of thing. In my mind, before the 2020 season, the Arizona Diamondbacks were in that casino, and they were the guy that just pushed in a big old pile of chips. They went out and got Starling Marte. They were going to compete against the Dodgers, who were adding players left and right, the up-and-coming Padres. And they added Starling Marte. They made a big move with Zach Greinke, able to revitalize the minor leagues a little bit. And then they brought in Madison Bumgarner on a low salary deal early on. It's going to inflate a little bit. But what happened with the coronavirus was that table got flipped over and the chips went everywhere. Okay. Now, because in 2018, 2019, after the Greinke deal, it was the Diamondbacks are going to be spenders going into 2021 because they'll be free of the Greinke contract. They'll be free of the Yasmani contract, Yasmani Tomas. And they're going to be able to make some deals here. They're going to be able to have some flexibility. Mike Hazen's finally going to have, you know, for the first couple of years, his arm was tied behind his back with the Zach Greinke deal. He had to get creative. Now he doesn't need to by necessity. He can as a luxury. But that was prior to the coronavirus. No one saw that coming. And the cash flow is an issue now for a lot, not just for the Diamondbacks, for a lot of major league teams. But the timing was just really rough. That was the time they said, all right, we're going to go get an all-star center fielder. We're going to give up some good prospects for him. We're going to go get Madison Bumgarner, who has been one of the best pitchers and best playoff pitchers over recent years, and he struggled. They had to trade away Starling Marte. It looks like a much different, much younger team. But as guys start to come back, I think things are going to stabilize a little bit. If you can get Joaquin Soria back relatively soon, if you can get Tyler Clippard back, and Clippard sounds like that won't be anytime soon, if at all, this season. If you can add to that bullpen, who I think has been, it's been good. It hasn't been great. It's been fine. But they have a bunch of starters in there, so they can have that length. Just in case, if you need Alex Young to go throw one inning, great. If you need him to go throw three, great. If you need Matt Peacock to go throw an inning, great. If he needs to go four, okay. He already showed that in his major league debut. So I think the Diamondbacks are a really interesting team. They're not being talked about by the national media all that much. At the beginning of the year, Fangraphs, who does a really good job with their analytics, gave them a 2% chance to make the postseason. Do I think they're going to make the postseason? Not necessarily. Do I think they're going to surprise people? Yes. It's going to be really interesting. On the Suns side, they continue their winning ways. They're going to have the first winning season since 2013-2014. 37 wins, they guaranteed they will have a winning season. The irony, 2013-2014 had a winning season, didn't make the playoffs. I think this team is well positioned to still make the playoffs, but had a big game, a big back-to-back against Utah and at the Clippers. They lost to the Clippers, but beat Utah in overtime, and it's a good barometer of what it's going to be like playing high-quality opponents back-to-back days, you know, kind of slogging it out a little bit. And they got a very good win against Washington as well. So they play Houston, Miami, Sacramento, and San Antonio this week. There are a lot of games and not a lot of time, so it's going to kind of ramp up here for the Phoenix Suns. But we're seeing what Booker can do. Ayton has shown more throughout, and if he can be kind of that fourth piece to Chris Paul, Devin Booker, and Mikal Bridges, all of a sudden I think that this two seed could be warranted. But even with that, the Jazz are the one, the Suns are the two. Everyone's still talking about the LA teams coming up and potentially making some moves. So we'll see what happens with that. If LeBron can come back, it's a whole different ball game. But now's the time for the Phoenix Suns to really cement themselves as a high seed, get that home court advantage where they can. I don't know if it's going to mean as much with limited capacities, but there's definitely some stuff to look out for here as they wrap up their schedule. So a lot to get to. Again, we're going to have up next, hopefully Jody Jackson here of Bally Sports Arizona, helping us break down a little bit more on the Arizona Diamondbacks. And then we also have Chris Cartman and Shayna Rubin to talk all things ASU and also preview Diamondbacks and A's. That's all coming up next on the Brad Sussmat Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sussmat Show. I'm Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy and wanted to continue our discussion on the Arizona Diamondbacks. And of course, that means we need to bring in Jody Jackson of Bally Sports Arizona as the Diamondbacks are in full swing. Jody, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, glad to be here. Glad to join you, Jordan. And yeah, luckily after a couple of wins, things are looking up for the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, definitely an encouraging series against the Cincinnati Reds team that was setting records with their offense. And I think that makes Luke Weaver's performance all the more impressive. You know, coming off of a rough 2020, a shortened 2019, the two starts he's been able against the Rockies, 5 2/3, 3 runs, but they were 3 solo shots. And then what he was able to do on Sunday, just what jumps out to you about what Luke's been able to do here early on? And I think what's probably a pretty important year for him.
Yeah, I think you're right, Jordan. It's a very important year for him. And I think that the performance yesterday was fantastic, going no hit through 6 1/3. Perfect game till in that sixth inning when he hit a batter. But because the Coors Field performance, while I really loved that he went 5 2/3, that was big. But you still thought, okay, 3 homers, is the long ball a concern? So the fact that, you know, he did what he did on Sunday is really big for Luke because he's been working really hard. I think all of us are very happy for him. I know his teammates. I mean, he's a guy, he's kind of got a lot of humor and a fun guy, and everyone just really likes Luke, and they know how hard he works and they know the struggles. And I remember in 2019, some of the outings that he had before he went on the DL, IL, I guess it's IL now. I don't know when they changed that a couple years ago.
Yeah, that was the crossover period.
Yeah, I have a hard time still not saying DL, but, you know, he was so good. And then the elbow injury hit, and he didn't end up needing, you know, surgery. It healed on its own. But, you know, last year was disappointing. You see that record 1-9, and you think about, wow, you know, really illustrates what a tough time he had and even going deep into games. And so, yeah, I think it's promising for him. And he's just doing it fastball changeup. You know, he does have a cutter that he throws, slider, but he really didn't, you know, use any of those pitches. He basically threw, I think, 1 or 2 cutters. And, you know, I don't think Brandon Webb and I were talking, and I asked Brandon on the show last night, you know, do you think he'll just stick with this? And I guess, you know, Brandon's like, why wouldn't he with it working the way that it is? The changeup was really good. And so we're going to see what he can put together this season, because with Mad Bum struggling, Merrill Kelly has struggled a little here out of the gate. And it's been these young pitchers, Widener and Riley Smith, that are just filling in, that have done well. And then Zach Gallen hopefully will be back very soon, maybe even tomorrow. And, you know, Luke is a very important piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so funny that in spring training, I can't tell you how many articles I saw or articles I wrote about the key to Luke Weaver's slider and cutter. And then he best performance ends up throwing 1 the entire game.
Yeah, I think we were all caught off guard with that. But hey, whatever works, right?
Yeah, exactly. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. So another, I think, bounce back guy, Eduardo Escobar. You know, obviously, really rough 2020. He came in, slimmed down, struggled a bit out of the gate. But now you see him hitting 4 home runs. You know, in 4, or I guess a home run in 4 straight games. You know, it seems like Torrey's been kind of doing the, you know, having a lot of guys kind of shift in and out of that infield. But how important of a year is it for Eduardo as well to get off to a hot start and have something a little bit closer to 2018, 2019?
Yeah, I mean, what he did in 2019 was crazy. And you're thinking, can he repeat it? And then you saw last year was just awful, right? So you're right. He did slim down, 20 pounds or so. He talked about, you know, Fogo power, but salad in there too now, not just meat, rice, and beans all the time. But, you know, he's been, you know, he just wasn't connecting with the ball those first couple games. And it was those first five games, I want to say he was like 0 for 21. And when you first see that and you're thinking, ooh, you know, how long is it going to take him to get hot? And then all of a sudden he starts just hitting bombs. And so, yeah, it's actually, we're going to talk about that on the pregame today and relive with Mark Grace. You know, Reggie Sanders is one of the five guys that did it. Actually, it was four guys that have done that, because Troy Gloss did it twice, but it's only been done now six times in D-backs history, where it's four straight games with a homer. So it is pretty rare. Yeah. But Reggie Sanders actually, you know, one hit six in four games. So we'll take a look at that. But, you know, it's great to see. You know, we joked about, could he hit a fourth yesterday? He did. So, you know, maybe we'll see a fifth today. But he's another guy, very important, especially with Ketel Marte out. These guys are all going to need to turn it up at the plate.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Ketel. You've mentioned Zach Gallen. It seems like, I don't know if there's a team that might have been bit by the injury bug more than the Diamondbacks here early on. But Torrey has talked so much about the depth that they have, and it might be young depth, but he's confident in those guys. How important do you think it's going to be now having that depth as guys like Cole Calhoun, Nick Ahmed come back? So the kind of the regular cast of characters are there, but then you still have some young guys that can, you know, help support in less of a, you know, major role.
Yeah, I mean, because the first week of the season, and you know, these guys are talented. So when I say these names, I'm not disrespecting them in any way. But like, and in fact, Pavin Smith was in there yesterday. Pavin Smith has been in there at times, and he's been hitting. But you know, you've got young players like Josh Rojas and Pavin Smith, and you had to call up Geraldo Perdomo. And when you see these guys in a lineup, they're sprinkled in there, and it just, there's a lot of young at bats versus where a bunch of veterans linking some at bats, and so. It's going to be a little different. It might be a little bit harder to create that offense, but I don't remember a season like this where you had all these injuries but luckily now some are trickling in. You know, you had, trying to think who was the first one coming back. I guess it was Cole, but you know, Cole coming back, Cole Calhoun, and then Nick Ahmed, and it looks like Gallen shortly here. But Soria and Clippard, Joaquin Soria and Tyler Clippard were going to be huge pieces in this bullpen, and they're still out, and Clippard will be out for a while, it looks like, because when he got hurt in spring, they said shut down for 6 weeks, which means then not going to pitch for quite a bit longer than that as he gets back into it. And, you know, so they probably never envisioned calling up, you know, Matt Peacock and Anthony Swarzak and, you know, different guys. And so it's worked out okay. I mean, they've been kind of like, you know, getting to the point now where they do have these other guys coming in and they're starting to win some games, but it's got to be difficult for Torrey Lovello, you know, just trying to manage a lot of young players, and they'll all be productive someday, hopefully. But right now you want to see that same group that you planned on having.
Mm-hmm. Obviously injuries create quite a bit of uncertainty here, but what area of the team do you have the most questions about moving forward to see kind of the trajectory of this team in 2021?
Well, gosh, that's a tough one, because the two biggest things, I don't know, I guess bullpen, because bullpen can be so up and down with a lot of teams. I'm just going to kind of put that aside, which is sort of a weird thing to do. But starting pitching and offense, I think the defense is going to be fine. I think the defense last year, we saw some lapses in focus. I think the defense is fine. So it's kind of a toss up between starting pitching and consistent offense. And I think that this team will create more consistent offense. So I'm more concerned about the starting pitching, because again, that those two guys in the front of the rotation, well, you get Zach back. This is assuming Zach is going to come back and be Zach Gallen, which is, you know, Mr. like 6-7 innings, 2 runs or less. And hopefully that's the case. And, you know, so Madison Bumgarner, Merrill Kelly, and only Merrill. I have some faith in Merrill for sure. But, you know, coming off the thoracic outlet surgery and just, you know, he says he feels great and that's not a factor at all. But, you know, until you can come back and be as effective as you were. I think the concern is just Mad Bum wasn't good last year, and now we haven't seen him good yet this year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I do like the young arms if they have to be in there, which is Widener and Riley Smith. But they're unproven. They're going to have ups and downs. So probably starting pitching. You know, I'm a big believer in pitching and defense because offense can come and go for any team, no matter how, you know, even a team like the Dodgers, they go up and down in slumps. The thing with them is they have so many players who are dynamic and put up big numbers that they can have two or three guys in a slump and still end up putting up runs consistently. This Diamondbacks team, you know, they have a lot of very good offensive players, but if one or two guys start slumping, it's harder to pick it up. So I think that'll be okay, though. I'm looking for the starting pitching to get more consistent.
Jody, it's good to see you back at Chase Field for what seems to be a full season and with some fans in the stands. Thanks so much for joining us and giving your insight on the early takes for the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Well, thanks, Jordan. It's great to be back and great to see the fans there. And I'm happy to join you anytime.
Awesome. Well, thank you again. And coming up next, we have Chris Cartman talking all things ASU football and men's basketball. That's coming up next on the Brad Sessmatt Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Jordan Hamm, and we are ready to talk some ASU football, ASU hoops with Chris Cartman of the Sun Devil Source, one of the best out there. He has his finger on the pulse of all things Sun Devil athletics. Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
Doing good, man. How are you, Jordan?
Doing good. Ready to get through and get to a normal-ish football season, and hopefully basketball follows as well. So excited to chat with you. I know a lot going on here with the Sun Devils football team. Just wrapped up spring ball. Usually starts a little bit earlier, but I know that there was a lot to take out of that. I know that a lot of guys were able to get a lot of young guys were able to get reps. A lot of the more experienced players might have taken a bit of a backseat, but it seemed like Herm Edwards and Antonio Pierce from the get-go always talked about, we want to get deeper and we want to get bigger from day one that they were here. Now that they're a few years into this, how do you see that materializing now that you've been able to see, especially some of the newer recruits coming in?
Yeah, so part of that is just a natural progression. As you said there, you get to your fourth year of kind of building it in the image that you want it to be. And certainly it's the most talented and the deepest that they've been. And not just really in the Herm Edwards era, but really, in my opinion, you got to go back a lot longer than that. The whole freezing of eligibility really changed the dynamic because you have so many seniors coming back who otherwise wouldn't be part of your program. So in the spring, they had 70-ish scholarship players, which is unusual. And they had 20 starters back, which is pretty much unheard of, right? 11 on defense. They were the youngest defense in the country a few years ago. And now you look and you see those guys are starting everywhere. And so you have one of the most experienced veteran defenses in the country. The offense is not quite there, but I would say that it's definitely trending in that direction. Four offensive line starters. The run game was so good last year. Of course, Jaden Daniels. Everyone's going to be looking at kind of what he has in store for his third season, right? And the young players, guys who I think would have immediately factored in previous years are now able to kind of just build and assimilate and kind of get their feet underneath of them, which is a really great thing because to not have to rely on them, but to know they can go out there and help you. They have the most newcomers, actually, probably since I've been doing this. It's been a big movement in recent years to get a lot of these spring enrollees. And between Division I transfers and junior college guys and high school guys, they're touching double digits now, which is a big change in the last decade. And some of those guys came in looking very much the part. And I think they're like Tommy Hill and RJ Regan look really great. But they're just not needed because you have such a good secondary right now. So their overall picture is really quite good, especially when you add on top of that the fact that it's the second year of their offense and defense. So whereas last year they were really sort of just trying to figure that out with all their personnel back and the same schemes, I think they can hit the ground running.
With the receiving core, that's one area where there's a lot of youth, a lot of talent, but not much experience. It seems like the past couple of years with ASU, it was N'Keal Harry is the number one. Brandon Ayuk is the number one. Frank Darby is the number one. It doesn't seem like, at least at this point, that there's kind of a clear cut number one. Do you see it's going to be more of a group kind of coming up as a committee, or do you see one guy kind of separating himself as being the number one guy for Jaden Daniels?
I don't see a clear-cut number one. And if there is a question about this team, in my opinion, it's going to be their passing game, and in particular, how the receivers sort of handle the high expectations that the rest of the team seems pretty ready to meet. You have some really talented guys. They have 5 or 6 4-star guys. They're just all younger, and they haven't really done it at this level. I think Elijah Badger, having sat out last year due to academics, people really didn't get a chance to see or know what type of an athlete that he is, but he has a special type of potential. You know, I don't want to say that he's Brandon Ayuk potential, but I think that people have compared him to a younger version of that. So, you know, we'll see. But LV Bunkley Shelton and Johnny Wilson are also extremely heralded guys who I think improved a lot. Where ASU may have been hurt is just only playing 4 games last season compared to some teams getting 6-7 games to get that extra sort of assimilation to major college football, right? And so I think Bunkley Shelton is solid, and he'll be a good pass catcher. Johnny Wilson has big-time potential. You have a lot of speed on the perimeter between Jordan Porter and Andre Johnson. Those guys have the ability to make big plays down the field, but there is no sort of clear-cut top one or two guys. And I think that somebody's going to definitely need to step up in that role.
Mm-hmm. The Sun Devils have a luxury in that they know who the quarterback's going to be. There's no question with that. But during spring ball, I saw you reporting a lot on the other guys in that quarterback room. I know that Finn Collins kind of jumped out to you, and you know, Trenton Borgé has had his moments. The depth behind Jaden Daniels, what jumps out to you about any of those guys?
Well, there's no doubt that if something happens to Jaden Daniels, the potential for the team really, you know, goes into a different place. They're not going to be nearly as good. I do think that Trenton Borgé is quite a good player for a former walk-on. I think he's extremely serviceable. I would say he's sort of like a little lesser version of Taylor Kelly, like a guy who can run the read option and can manage it, doesn't have a big arm, but he's accurate, tends to make really good decisions. Finn Collins impressed me for a newcomer because it didn't really feel like he was trying to catch up to everything. A lot of times you see guys almost look clumsy because they're trying to figure out scheme and everything is going too fast, but he has a little bit of a X factor quality, I would say, to him, that once he does sort of get all of the processing of the offense down and kind of understand the pieces and the players, I think he has a chance because his arm talent's really good. He's accurate. He throws a super clean ball. He's a little bit more mobile than I had anticipated. So while he probably won't be ready to play this season, by next season, I think there's a chance that he could be at least a serviceable Pac-12 quarterback.
On the basketball end of things, obviously high expectations going into this last year. A lot of things that no one foresaw happening with the coronavirus. But obviously a disappointing year for Bobby Hurley. What do you think he took away from this year that he can use moving forward for future teams, whether it's roster construction or just the way that they were able to navigate that season?
Yeah, super tough. You know, the multiple COVID interruptions and injuries and illnesses, it seemed like the full gamut kind of happened to them. Those things aside, I don't think that they were going to be as good as people expected. The loss of Romello White really kind of hurt them in the post. And then Jalen Graham getting mono, you know, takes that to a different place of problems. Bobby Hurley said after the season, something that was very interesting. It was essentially, I need to get guys that I want to go to war with. And I took that to mean that maybe some guys on his roster, he had to work too hard to get them in the right mindset that he wants them to be in, from a physicality, toughness, competitiveness, rebounding standpoints. And so the good news for him is that the spring has really become the bigger time of year now to recalibrate and build your roster again. It used to be, of course, that November signing period was all important and most top kids sign, and maybe you could get one transfer or something like that. The way that the portal has gone this year and how many guys are available and the number of high school kids who are waiting is just totally different. And so I think he kept that sort of a mindset of who are going to be competitive, hungry guys that we can add to our roster for this coming season and really sort of have a different looking type of a team and dynamic. And they added 9 guys have committed or signed who are going to be new to the team this year, which is the most, I'm sure, in history. Like, there's just basketball has changed so much that now it's not that uncommon to only have a few guys coming back to your team.
Mm-hmm. With this transfer portal and the transfer market and what they've been able to do, they're going to lose a couple players but have plenty coming in as well. Bobby Hurley, it seems like his best teams, it was always based around the guards, and they've had size here and there, but it's really been a guard-based team. It seems like all the additions have been bigs or guys with length that can, you know, create some havoc, you know, in the lanes and that sort of thing. How do you see, you know, this roster transforming a little bit from what was kind of guard you now to maybe a little bit bigger?
Yeah, I think it's welcomed by fans, certainly. There's been a lot of frustration about not having enough size or depth to compete with some of the better teams, and that shouldn't really be the case this year. A 5-star high school prospect is reclassifying after committing to ASU, Enoch Bowache. I think he's really impressive. He's the type of guy that can come in and make a huge immediate impact. 6'10 with a 7-foot-plus wingspan and a good rebounder and shot blocker, and he runs the floor and has some offensive poise and skill. And then A.J. Brahma from Robert Morris was a double-double guy there last year, averaging 21 points, 10 rebounds. He's 6'7", and I think he has some versatility to play 2 or 3 positions in the front court pretty effectively, which is that's a big deal for them. There's the possibility that Kamani Lawrence might actually return. He's talking about it. I think he kind of finally sort of clicked in and came into his own there as a senior. So he's thinking maybe if I go another full year, that might help my ability to play overseas or something like that. Still waiting on what's going to happen with Marcus Bagley. He's going to go through the whole NBA process. Probably won't know on him until maybe June. But if they get 1 or 2 of those guys back, plus, of course, Jalen Graham, who I think after he had mono looked a lot better on the court. That gives you some different combinations and a lot more length that's available to you. And then to offset the losses of Alonzo Verge and Remy Martin, which are of course significant, and even Josh Christopher, they added a couple of big impact transfers including the MAC player of the year, Marion Jackson. Guy's just a prolific scorer. He took more threes than I think anybody in the country over the last 2 years, averaged at least 18 points a game, rebounds really well for a guard, 6 rebounds a game at 6 foot, 200 pounds. He's tough, gritty, physical. They have Luther Mohammed, the Ohio State transfer, coming off of sitting out post-transfer, and he's a defender. And then they got Heath from Boston College was the number 12 score in the ACC. So he's an offensive guy, albeit somebody who did it on a bad team. I think they're just going to be more competition in practice, and it's going to be harder for guys to lock down roles. And it seems like they'll be a better defensive team and rebounding team. And that is, everybody who watches March Madness knows you got to be able to do those things to make any sort of a run.
Mm-hmm. Last question here, but I think ASU fans knew the impact that Rashawn Burno had on the coaching staff and recruiting. But I think you have a better beat on just how much he really did. Him moving on, becoming a head coach, obviously something that good programs are going to have to deal with. But what impact does his departure leave for Bobby Hurley and that coaching staff?
Well, I think he was so important to Bobby's psyche and just his overall mood and, how they sort of managed their program. It was a very much of, a two-headed monster in some respects when it goes to like talking to their players and handling the recruiting piece and thinking about like what type of schemes that they should put on the floor. Rashawn Burno was as connected to Bobby Hurley as any assistant coach that I've seen at ASU in those respects. And so that's going to be different. Now, I don't think they're going to really change all that much structurally. And if anything, Bobby Hurley may be more self-reliant from a recruiting standpoint and figuring out like what things they should be doing and why. I'm interested to see kind of how that's going to work. I don't anticipate that he's going to add schematic type coaches, guys who are going to help on the XO side. A lot of fans think that maybe that's where they should be fortifying. And I think there's a case to be made for that. But you could also say that part of that may be going back to Hurley saying that we need to have the right types of players to run the things that we want to run. So I'll be really interested, Jordan. The one thing I will say is Hurley's added talent better than any coach at ASU in a very long time. And, it's a talent game, really, at the end of the day, college basketball. And so they should, again, be very competitive type of team in the Pac-12.
Chris Cartman, there's a reason I call you the best in the business. Thanks so much for all the insight and the time breaking down both ASU football and ASU men's basketball.
Always my pleasure, man. Thanks.
That's Chris Cartman, and this is the Brad Sesmat Show. Well, the Arizona Diamondbacks continue their early season, and what we've been able to do here on Diamonds in the Desert is preview the series with those that know the club best. We've been able to have some of the writers of the teams that they've already played, and excited to have Shayna Rubin on to help us preview the two-game series between the Arizona Diamondbacks and the Oakland A's. She's a writer for the San Jose Mercury News and a dear friend of mine. And so, Shayna, thanks so much for joining us on a busy Monday.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. So I'm sure the A's fans are not happy with the MLB schedule makers right now. Seems like you guys have just been, or the A's have been going through a gauntlet. Started the season with a series against the Astros, then the Dodgers and the Astros again. Part of that is playing in a tough AL West, but also a pretty tough slog there in the middle. But I did see a quote that you tweeted the other day from Frankie Montas that the vibe is changing. Seems like the A's are starting to put some things together. What do you attribute them being able to change that vibe to?
They've always been slow starters. And I think that playing the Astros seven times didn't help get the role going as quickly as they would have hoped. I think that they're also starting to get used to playing with some of the new guys they have. Obviously, they have maintained the same core. They have Matt Chapman, Matt Olson. They have Ramon Laureano. They have Frankie Montas. They have a lot of people that have, they have the same core, but they also have welcomed Elvis Andrus, their new shortstop. And they have Kai Tom, their Rule 5 outfielder. And what they've said, and maybe it doesn't make sense just as a concept because they've had so many of the same players, but they said they're still getting used to playing with each other. So I think that sort of can be attributed to their slow start. Is that they're still trying to get used to each other. They're still trying to figure out the vibes. Now the vibes are sort of coming into place, it seems like. Mm-hmm.
The A's have two of the more highly anticipated young pitchers in A.J. Puck and Jesus Luzardo. We're going to see Luzardo on Tuesday, mm-hmm. but I know that the A's have been very careful with working him out of the bullpen and then some limited starts here and there, especially with a shortened season. How have you seen him just progress over the recent years? And it seems like more they're giving him more and more freedom to be a big rotation piece now.
Yeah, I mean, they see him as a potential ace, as a potential dude. So I think that when he made his debut, he was coming out of the bullpen, mostly just because he hasn't pitched many innings overall in his entire career. He had a couple surgeries, he had a couple injuries. So when he came up, it was just sort of, we're going to slow roll you into this whole big league thing. And now that he's had some time in the big leagues under his belt, they're sort of, I don't even want to say they're fast tracking, but they're pushing him into the place where they want him to be, which is at the front of end of the rotation.
Mm-hmm. Bob Melvin has been a staple for Oakland. He also won a World Series with the Diamondbacks. So some crossover there. Just how have you seen him build the culture to what it is now, where it's, usually he's doing a lot more with a lot less, at least in terms of financially, but able to still, it always seems like the A's are in the playoff hunt and making, playing meaningful baseball in the second half of the season.
Yeah. I mean, I think the knock against the A's is always that there's a revolving door there. You know, there's a lot of players weaving in and out of the organization, a lot of changeover, a lot of big trades, a lot of fans get upset over star players being traded. But Bob Melvin's been the most constant presence there other than the front office. He's in his 11th season, I believe. So he's sort of been able to create the culture of stability that maybe has been lacking, or maybe they've been knocked for not having. So when you talk to players about, you know, what makes them most comfortable on the team, they immediately say Bob Melvin, because he's been able to create the stability that maybe they players feel like they don't have otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Joaquin Soria, another crossover. Diamondbacks have only been able to see him for 2/3 of an inning, and then he was removed from the game due to injury. But I know that he had a pretty big role with the A's. What did you see out of him in his time with Oakland? I know that Diamondbacks are probably thinking of him more a little bit as a closer. I know he had a slightly different role, but as a reliever, just what sort of presence can he bring to that bullpen?
He was sort of a fearless reliever. I mean, last year, what I remember most about his performance was that he was able to whip out some new pitches at the most essential time to get some key outs. And I think that's what's been helped him elongate his career, is that he's sort of a fearless guy. He's got a lot of years under his belt. He understands how to get from season to season. He also knows how to plant himself in a clubhouse. A lot of the guys on the team, I mean, the A's are a generally young team. They thought of him and Yusmeiro Petit as sort of father figures, that they were the go-to guys in the clubhouse. So I think that he wasn't a closer with the A's. I mean, they had Liam Hendricks while he was there, but he was always good for, at least last year, he was always good for a big key out. And he was on last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's fair to say similar with Diamondbacks. Quite a young bullpen, and they did something similar bringing in Soria and Tyler Clippard. Now both of them injured here early on. So we'll see how that matures throughout the season. But Shayna, wanted to wrap things up with all of the guests we've had that have their finger on the pulse, obviously, of the baseball team, but also a lot of baseball fans are food fans. So if there is a Arizona fan checking out Oakland, wanting to catch an A's game, is there a concession stand that's a go-to? Is there a restaurant that's walking distance or, you know, in the immediate area that they just have to check out?
Oh, the concession stands in Oakland, at the Coliseum, I don't go to the concession stands too much, to be honest. I have to look up the name of the one that everyone goes to. It's Fish and Chips and Greens and Things. That's what I'm thinking of. I was thinking there's an inn in both of them. I've heard good things about Riz and Things and Fish and Chips, Doc Fish and Chips.
Okay. Can definitely get behind that.
Yeah, I think the thing about the Coliseum is that there's a lot of hidden gems there. I mean, obviously, it's, you know, it's good to just go get your hot dog and nachos, but they've got some good food hidden around the ballpark for sure.
Well, now that we've touched on baseball and food, I think we're definitely ready for this series between the Diamondbacks and the A's. Shayna, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is Shayna Rubin, Oakland A's reporter for the San Jose Mercury News, and this is the Brad Sesmatt Show.